News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:07 on your, I was going to say Monday. It's not Monday. Monday was yesterday. No, Dan. Bad Dan. It is Tuesday of this holiday shortened work week. And so Labor Day was great. We had great weather and a lot of people had to, you know, put their work to the side and had a good day.
Yeah. And of course, I'm sure the beaches were full over the weekend. I only know that because I was hearing some horror stories of people coming back west yesterday at the end of the long holiday weekend. But we'll start to see fewer and fewer people down there now that school's in session and football is on the TV. I know our next guest probably spent at least a few minutes watching some football over the weekend, and that is Quinn Hillier. And you can read his work at quinnhillier.com. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Dalton. Good morning, listeners.
Yeah, so a lot to get into with you, especially since, we didn't talk last week as the polls had just opened up, and now we know the results. Runoff with Barbara Drummond and Spiro Chariagatis for mayor of Mobile. What were your thoughts once those returns started coming in Tuesday evening, Quinn?
Well, the thoughts were that there's something encouraging and something not fully encouraging for each of the remaining two candidates. If you do the arithmetic, and which I'll explain in a minute if you want me to, I would make Spiro Chariagatis a very slight favorite going into the runoff, but that is assuming that the turnout is about the same, and that, which is a big assumption, which might not be true, or that whatever turns out will turn out in the same proportions that it turned out, in terms of, maybe a bunch of people that might have voted for Spiro Chariagatis didn't vote, but they'll vote this time to make up for ones that voted the last time that are out hunting or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that the proportions stay the same. If the proportions stay the same, it looks like a very slight advantage, but easily overcomable. An advantage for Chariagatis, overcomable by Drummond.
Yeah, and the turnout question, I mean, that's pretty much what it all hinges on, right? And where those voters for Prine especially, but Drummond as well, Hudson as well, where those end up going, those votes for those two candidates who are now off the ballot. But I just assumed, Quinn, that turnout will probably be lower this month than it was for the first run of the polls last week. But we had a lot of texters last week who said, hey, I knew this was going to a runoff, so I didn't even vote yet. I was planning on voting in September the whole time. Do you think that the turnout, I mean, I'd be surprised if it was at 26% like it was last week.
Well, that's why I say there might be some Chariagatis voters or some Drummond voters who didn't vote the first time for exactly the reason you gave, but who say they're coming out the second time. But then again, there might be a lot of people who did vote the first time, but they've got family plans on the second or, whatever. So
Right. If
the I'm sort of assuming the total turnout is going to be about the same, even if you add some and subtract some, and that the distribution will be about the same. Again, that's a big assumption, which means this is a very close race. But the way that I did it, you set aside the Prine voters right now because you don't know exactly what they're doing. Some of them are just anti-Sandy Stimson, and therefore they're anti-Chariagatis.
Right.
Some of them are anti-establishment in general, but that doesn't mean that they're going to like Barbara Drummond any better. They see her as part of the old establishment from before when she was a key part of Sam Jones's term. You've got some race issues in there. You don't know how that breaks. And you don't know whether some of it was just enthusiasm for Prine for voters who therefore might not turn out at all.
Yes.
So I'm just assuming the Prine vote, you take all that, you stir it around, and whatever Prine vote there is still in the runoff, it comes out about 50-50.
Right.
Okay? So you throw that out. Then I'm looking at Connie Hudson's voters, which are the key. And some people say I'm being generous to Barbara Drummond by giving her 25% of the Connie Hudson voters. But I think they break down about 75-25, Chair Gattis to Drummond.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that and you then just add the numbers flat out, Chair Gattis comes out just over 1,000 votes ahead.
Hmm.
Now, that, you know, that is not a lot of votes. And how many total votes were there?
There were about 40,000 total, yeah. And Drummond and Chair Gattis were separated by about 2,500.
Right. So I'm saying that if the Hudson votes go 75-25, then Chair Gattis makes up that 2,500 vote margin plus an extra 1,000, mm-hmm. 1,100.
There's also another...
That makes it a very close race. We're talking 21,000 to 19,000, something like that.
All right, let's put this factor in as well. Okay, so now we've got the runoff coming up. We're not sure about what the turnout's going to be. But a couple of things. There was not a great black turnout in the first place, mm-hmm. correct? Dalton, that was a little bit lower.
Yeah, that's something Brendan Kirby pointed out. Yeah, kind of looking back. He said turnout lagged in the black community were his words.
So you have that. And also this. Spiro's got the money / organization. If it takes manpower, willpower, money power to get your people to get out and vote, organizationally, I think that he would have a leg up.
Exactly, which are two very important factors. So, again, everything to me points to a slight but only slight edge to Spiro Chair Gattis. But that means, again, all you have to do is have a little bit of a shift in this turnout or a few more prime voters actually just hating the whole Sandy mm-hmm. Simpson thing and therefore voting for Drummond. So they break, say, if they break 60-40 for Drummond, Drummond wins. So both sides need to really be on their games because either way could happen. And, you know, this sounds like, oh, any idiot can say, oh, anything can happen. But that's the math. The math is that close that's why, you know, this isn't just punting and saying, I don't know what's going to happen. This is saying this really does look close mathematically.
Yeah, wouldn't you think that both parties... I say parties, both
campaigns,
camps,
yeah,
would be right now behind the scenes in a, I don't know, talking to the greatest supporters of Prime, talking to the greatest supporters of Connie Hudson, kind of trying to make a deal with them to motivate their people to get out and vote for candidate A or candidate B.
Well, yeah, if I'm Barbara Drummond, I try to figure out how many of the Prime voters are just avidly anti-Stimson, and then try to tie Stimson to Chair Gattis.
But you have to get people out to vote as well. So there's got to be that motivation as well.
Well, exactly. So you say you do some phone polling, and you don't even really say, are you for Drummond or are you for Chair Gattis, but you say, what are your views towards Stimson? What are your, you know, and you delve down into that. And anytime you identify somebody there that is furiously anti-Sandy Stimson, if you're Drummond's people, then you start bombarding them with mailers,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, and to try to motivate them to vote. Likewise, if you're Spiro Chair Gattis, and there are some people that you've identified that seemed like they were really big stems, you know, really thought highly of Sandy Stimson, but didn't go out and vote, because you can check the voter rolls to see who voted.
Right.
You got to figure out how to motivate them the second time. This is all very much sort of campaign 101, but 101 with a lot of energy. That's what it takes.
We're talking with Quinn Hillier. Read his work. He's with The Advocate, NOLA.com, also QuinnHillier.com. You can get it all there. I think it's fair, too, Quinn, and many point out in our text line, you know, if they're going to link Spiro and with Stimson with the endorsement and say, hey, he's just a continuation of the Sandy Stimson office, I think it's fair to say, well, Barbara Drummond played a role in the Sam Jones administration, too. So are we going to kind of get, in a way, it's Sam Jones versus Sandy Stimson in this race?
Well, sort of, and that's and I did mention that early on when I said, you know, do the prime voters see her as part of the establishment too? Mm-hmm. Look, Sam Jones's second term was not a popular term. It just flat out wasn't a popular term, and Barbara Drummond played a very big role in that. Now, I think I've said on the air, maybe this was the one I didn't get to, but Barbara Drummond is a very nice lady. She is a very nice lady, but she votes pretty darn liberal in the state legislature. That's not going to appeal to a lot of people. And she was an essential part of the Sam Jones team. So, do you want to go back to that? That's what a lot of voters in the middle are saying. And look, Sandy Stimson overall is a very popular mayor.
Mm-hmm.
If you go just by people's feelings on Sandy Stimson and you assign that directly to Chair Gattis would win. Now, you can't do that because Chair Gattis and Stimson are not the same people. But
right.
Still, it's better to be with Sandy Stimson than against him.
Yeah. Quinn, also, while we're talking municipals, we'll have two new faces on the Mobile City Council, one of them in an unopposed race, Bo Fleming, taking over for Joel Daves in District 3. Now, the upset came with incumbent for District 2, William Carroll, falling in a three-person race to Samantha Ingram. Ingram wins without a runoff necessary. I think Reggie Hill ended up with somewhere around 4% of the vote or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because Reggie Hill was bringing up, he was the one who filed a lawsuit that was thrown out, but that Samantha Ingram voted in Georgia's general just
last November,
and that she shouldn't have been eligible to run for office here in Mobile. Where does this leave us? I mean, Ingram won the race, so she is the next councilwoman for District 2, but I don't know if there's any other legal...
Well, there should be.
Yeah.
Look, the way I read the law, she's not eligible to serve. I mean, you cannot vote in another state and say you are a resident in this state unless you are, if you're a student, you've got to have one official residence, okay? She voted in, I think it was Georgia's elections, within the last year. That should mean she was not a resident of Alabama, and I think the law says you have to have been a resident for the last year
mm-hmm.
in order to be eligible. So she's not eligible. So I don't understand why William Carroll hasn't sued already. Reggie Hill sued, but as Judge Jill Phillips ruled, his suit was deficient. She specifically said not because of the substance of his claims, on which she did not opine at all, but because the filing had all sorts of technical problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm William Carroll, I'll look at that and I say, okay, I'm going to file the suit the right way, the way that Reggie Hill did not. I'm going to fix the technical problems, and I'm going to sue because she is not eligible. And I'm going to ask Judge Phillips or whoever gets the case the next time, ask them to actually rule on the merits of the case. I mean, look, I think she seems like a breath of fresh air. She seems like she could be a really good council person, but I don't think she's eligible to serve.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty clear cut that if Georgia's election laws are that you have to live there for 12 months before you can legally vote there in a general, and she voted there in a general, that she hasn't been a resident of Mobile for that for really any length of time, if that's how you go by it. So I don't know how it plays out. I guess, though, for Carroll and his point of view, he just lost, right, an election, lost pretty handily.
Mm-hmm.
So how bad does he want this job, I guess? How much time and effort is he willing to put into unseating Ingram after her win?
Yeah, because think about it, Dalton. This is not like it's one district in a town, Mobile, that is, you know, mid-sized, whatever you want to call it. But it's one of those cities where you get to know all the principal players. Players get to know the people who voted for them or against them, one way or the other. It's not that big. The city's not divided into districts that are all that large. She won. What kind of animosity would he face if he unseats the lady that mm-hmm. the people voted for?
Well,
right?
Look, that's a good point, but the other thing is Reggie Hill could fix the deficiencies, the technical deficiencies
mm-hmm.
in his suit.
And he could be the guy.
and refile the suit in the right way, in the right form, against the right defendant, and actually get it heard. I mean, look, and thinking that, okay, if she gets knocked out and can't serve, that means that there would have to be a special election. Well, if there's a special election, he can say, look, I'm the one that protected you against a carpetbagger, and I didn't get a fair chance the last time. Now listen to what I have to say. I mean, somebody could do that.
We'll have to see, or maybe nothing will happen.
Maybe nothing will happen.
Just have our new seven and with the two new faces.
Maybe we'll get William Carroll on to talk about that if he wishes to.
Yeah, that'd be great to have him on. Quinn, when we get back, I want to talk a little redistricting, too. It's all over the news with Texas and California. Well, we know a thing or two about it here in Alabama, too, so we'll get to that right after the break.
Gotcha.
It is 8:22, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings. Text line 251-343-0106. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. It is a football game coming up this week, Quinn.
Yes, indeed.
At South, right?
Yeah, here in Mobile, Green Wave coming to Mobile, Tulane. And that's always a good matchup, right? Tulane and South, kind of brotherly hate situation.
Tulane Green Wave looked awfully strong against Northwestern the other day. I'll just say that.
They trounced a Big Ten team, so there's something. There's a feather in their cap.
Yeah, put Northwestern through the car wash on Saturday is what they did there.
But I see what you did.
The Jags, though, Quinn, we have high hopes for them here in Mobile this year. Maybe didn't show out as much as we wanted them to against FCS team Morgan State, but I think they were just getting ready for this weekend. So 9-point dogs at home, the Jags are to Tulane. And
it should be a good game. And South, you know, I'm hoping South has a good season.
Is it true that the entire Green Wave team will be taking the Amtrak to the stadium? have we gotten any word on that?
That'd be old time, like Babe Ruth and the crew, you know, the Yankees taking a train across the country.
So we don't have...
If they did, they would arrive feeling very good because it's a good ride.
And I didn't leave us with enough time. We could start talking about it. We need to go more in depth, though, on this redistricting thing because you have Texas, you have California, Illinois, all of them talking about more gerrymandering going on. But ongoing cases, like we know here in Alabama with our redistricting, they just called the same thing on the state Senate here in Alabama. Does that relate to what's going on in Louisiana?
The state Senate might. The state congressional districts in Alabama, I think there's either a gentleman's agreement or even a court order that basically says there's some agreement that says the legislature won't challenge it again this time until 2030, even though technically what happens in the Louisiana case could have ramifications for Alabama. Certainly will have ramifications for Alabama and every other state, especially southern states, going forward. But the Louisiana case has gotten a lot bigger because now the Supreme Court has said it is going to directly address the issue that it has avoided for these last 40 years. Mm. And that is whether or not the 13th and 14th and 15th Amendments are directly contradicted by the court's earlier rulings on the Voting Rights Act. And that's a big deal we can explain a lot later, but okay. It's really big.
All right, till next time, Quinn, thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
All right, Quinn Hillier, read his work, quinnhillier.com, and more Mobile Mornings on the way, 251-343-0106. That's the phone and the text line if you want to hop on with us.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. Mobile Mornings at 8:35 on this Tuesday after Labor Day. I'm refreshed. I feel great. My voice, I don't know. I was alone most of the day. I'm alone most of the days, every day, in fact. I live like some kind of a strange poet, but I'm not. I'm just a guy that exercises.
I think it's called a hermit, right?
Yeah, like a hermit that writes poems. I wanted to put the poetry part in there, too. But anyway, I don't know why my voice is gone, like I was yelling all weekend, which I was not.
Yeah.
But welcome to Tuesday, shortened work week. Let's get after it. Let's have a good day.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you were screaming at the TV during that Marshall game, You need to chill out, man.
Georgia and Marshall?
Your team wins 45-7. I hope that's not why you lost your voice.
No.
But if you were young then, you'll probably scream a lot more when you take on Austin Peay this weekend.
Austin Peay actually beat Middle Tennessee over the weekend.
Oh.
So they're not bad.
Upset alert for the Georgia Bulldogs with Austin Peay. So, not the greatest week one for everybody in our listening audience. I don't think I need to say anything more, right? A pretty tough weekend for at least one team in our state. But listen, it's a long season. I've been through many of these with the Tennessee Vols. They didn't go your way week one. It's all right. There's 11 more weeks. So Bama fans, try not to be too upset. Things like this happen when Nick Saban isn't your coach. I'm sure it'll all work out in the end.
We'll address that in our podcast.
On our College Pick'em podcast. So I don't know how much news you paid attention to over the weekend. It seemed to me, and I tried not to turn the TV on too much, but when I did, Chicago was on the screen. And I think that'll probably take up quite a bit of bandwidth this week with the national media. Will the feds storm Chicago or will they not? And you have the Democrats really putting on full resistance with J.B. Pritzker, potential Democrat candidate for president maybe in the coming years. He's the governor of Illinois. You have the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, who was at some rallies screaming this weekend. And they're putting up, they're acting like they're ready to go to war over this if Trump sends the National Guard in. And all that being said, it was an incredibly violent Labor Day weekend in Chicago once again.
In the face of all of that, look at the numbers from this past weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And so Trump said he will have a press conference today. That's something that he really likes to do, is let you know that he's going to have a presser, but then doesn't tell you what that presser will be about. And it leaves everyone kind of, well, guessing, grasping for straws. So I'm going to guess.
You're going Russia, you go in Chicago.
I'm thinking this, and I might be wrong here, I'm thinking he's going to go either Russia or continue to hit at the Fed Reserve. That's
ooh,
my,
okay.
Maybe you tell us your theory or guess, 251-343-0106. What will Trump talk about today at his press conference? I mean, he may end up talking about everything, but what's the reason for the presser? I think it'll probably be about Russia because you had more attacks over the weekend as Russia escalated missile and drone attacks. In the story here, Ukraine's Air Force reported nearly 600 drones and dozens of missiles launched over the last week, killing 25 people, including 4 children. While the president initially warned of a couple weeks for progress or possible U.S. retaliation, he has since kind of downplayed enforcement of that threat. And it now has been a couple weeks since he said, we'll know in a couple weeks. He's continuing to liken Russia and Ukraine to children who will eventually get tired of fighting. You have a lot of analysts weighing in, of course, on both sides of the ledger there. Some say Moscow is exploiting the delays in peace in order to press on with their territorial gains and demoralize Ukrainians. And they're saying Russia has stepped up hybrid warfare in Europe, jamming EU officials' aircraft. That was a plane that von der Leyen was on, the EU president. They claimed that Russia scrambled their GPS while she was in the sky, visiting a lot of the countries nearby Russia. And they also damaged the EU delegation building in Kiev with some of those missile and drone strikes. Trump, though, continuing to try to keep ties between him and Putin cordial over these last few weeks. We'll see where it goes, though. And over the weekend, I guess going on now, you have kind of the opposite of a NATO meeting. You have Putin, who showed up in China yesterday. Xi Jinping rolled out the red carpet, like Trump did just last month in Alaska. They're calling it the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit. Analysts call it an axis of upheaval, a gathering of the axis of upheaval. The two leaders held detailed talks yesterday, including a debrief on Putin's recent summit with Trump in Alaska. They named Putin the main guest for a Tiananmen Square military parade that marks the end of World War II many years ago. And Putin expected to seek more support for his war effort during this meeting with China and these other countries. Leaders from India, Turkey, Iran, Serbia also in attendance. Turkey's President Erdogan trying to position his country as a mediator between Russia and the West. And von der Leyen, who I said they scrambled her GPS on the plane while she was riding around the skies of Europe, said Europe is preparing military deployments to Ukraine with the backing of the U.S., stressing that Trump wants peace, but warning Putin can only be contained through strong deterrence. And the last we have on what American forces, if there is any involvement, it will likely be in the skies and not on the ground. Still, that's far more of an escalation than a lot of people want to see.
Right, it's almost like NATO, EU, America, that's the Western Conference. Okay, mm-hmm. that's this part of the league. And then Russia and their friends,
yeah.
There's the Eastern Conference, right? Now, Erdogan, in the spot where he's got, it seems, some explaining to do, he says they're there, you know, they're a democratic nation, and America feels...
Just like India is supposed to be, right?
Right. Yeah. But
democracies?
So they're the democracy in there, and he's explaining it away as they're there in kind of a mediator mm-hmm. position or to represent some of the Western
interests
and attitudes.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of how he's spinning it.
And that may be just a spin, I don't know.
Yeah.
They're going to really play that role.
Everything is a spin, of yep. course, right? Russia's going to spin it one way to the Americans and another to the Chinese. India is spinning. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, he had a pretty good interview with Fox and spoke on a number of things yesterday, a couple of those involving Russia. He talked about this meeting in China. Here's Bessent.
I think at the end of the day, India is the most populous democracy in the world. Their values are much closer to ours than to China's, than to Russia's.
So he's saying India is there, but they're not all there, if you know what I mean. He's like, well, they're not really buying into this whole thing. But who knows, right? And Trump was talking up his relationship with the Indian PM Modi again last week. But there's a lot of tension because of the tariff negotiations yep. going on with India right now and their closeness to Russia, of course, with the energy. Bessent also talked about, well, whether Putin would be punished, because a lot of people are saying, hey, Trump said this. It was kind of a threat. If things don't get under control, he's going to supposedly make it more difficult on Russia. Bessent touched on that in that interview. Let me try again here. Here's Bessent.
He has, in a despicable manner, increased the bombing campaign. So I think with President Trump, all options are on the table, and I think we'll be examining those very closely this week.
So that'd be my guess. He talks about that. Maybe he comes out and talks Chicago. There's also a wild card out there because Jamie Comer and his House Oversight Committee, they're bringing in some Epstein victims to the Capitol today, and they'll talk in private with these Epstein victims about what they know, what they don't know.
Who they know.
This bipartisan inquiry continues. Maybe that's the wild card here. Trump comes out to talk about that. I'm not sure.
Wow.
There's certainly not a lack of things for him to possibly come out and discuss.
Well, he took a day and a half off, and people on the left were claiming he was dead.
Yeah.
I mean, he does these massive pressers nearly every day. I don't know how many days he took off. Was it Friday and Saturday? And suddenly these rumors are rampant where he had to come out on Truth Social and say, I feel better than ever.
So it was a strange amount of time to go without Trump in front of the cameras, because I think he spoke Tuesday of last week at the White House. And that might have been when the South Korean president was in town. He did those three. Remember, he had three pressers back to back to back. Took a whole day.
Yeah, it was like from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, and so he was gone after about Tuesday from the public eye, not from the public discussion, obviously. That never ends. So online, so many liberals were saying Trump's dead, like he's died, and they're now working on their backup plan. Right. Like that was all going on behind the scenes last week. So much of this comes off of, and I've seen Drudge. They love putting this up on Drudge Report, the bruise on Trump's hand, and it's been there on and off, since he came back into office. And at the very beginning of his second term, they're saying it's because he's shaking so many dang hands. He's an older man, got older skin, the bruise is easy, and he shakes so many hands, he just has a constant bruise on his hand. Well, as
because he doesn't give it a day off,
right,
to get better.
As more and more images come out, though, you have people saying that looks like a bruise on the hand where maybe they were putting some IV fluids in or putting an IV in for one reason or another.
Okay.
And I don't think the Trump administration is disputing that. I think they're saying, yeah, he might be getting some IVs, or I don't know if they've ever completely disputed that. But he came back in the only way that Trump knows how to come back, just guns blazing. And he wasn't upset with Putin. He wasn't directing his anger towards Jerome Powell. Trump was directing his anger over the weekend to a White House subcontractor. So on Saturday...
A guy messed up the garden or something like that?
Yeah. So on Saturday, Trump hops on Truth Social and was saying, I noticed in the Rose Garden, while he was out there looking at his renovations to the Rose Garden, that there was a huge gash stretching more than 25 yards of damaged limestone that had just been placed in the Rose Garden. And he pulled up security footage. So Trump goes to the White House security, pulls up footage, and finds the subcontractor or the video that he posted. He called them stupid people cracking the stone while moving shrubbery on a steel cart. I don't know if they had a wheel out on the steel cart and they were just kind of dragging it along the limestone.
Sounds like something that you could, you know, any of us could do stupidly in our own yard.
Yeah.
And then look back and say, oh, man, look what I've just done.
Except this was in the White House Rose Garden.
Yeah.
Trump's baby. Trump blasted the supervisor for watching as the damage occurred, vowed to replace the stone, bill the contractor, and bar the firm from future White House work, declaring, we caught them cold. Make America great again. So while, you know, there are a lot of liberals questioning Trump's health, I don't think you can say that that's not Trump. Because who else would come back and just full on go after a subcontractor who damaged the limestone? Only the real Trump would do that.
Yeah, only the real Trump would think to do that. So on Sunday's State of the Union, White House Senior Director of Counterterrorism, Sebastian Gorka, he was going back and forth with Breonna Keeler, I guess, is her name, over mass shootings committed by transgender people. Now, this is now, is it a trend? It seems to be, especially in institutions like Catholic and Christian schools. So she was arguing the point of, look, there's only a small percentage when you have these mass shootings. But he's like, wait a second, you're talking about two different things here. See if you can follow along with this.
You know, 96% of attackers in, when you're looking at the U.S. Secret Service National Threat Assessment Center, looking at 172 mass attacks in the U.S. between 2016 and 2020, 96% were non-trans. But are you missing the bigger picture here when you zero in on that instead of more broadly these school shooters as an epidemic, and you perhaps miss the through line that connects them all?
Well, no, because your facts obfuscate two things. You are using data based upon the predominant gun violence, which is gang-on-gang violence with zero ideological content by gun, which, of course, is not what we are talking about here today. So let's concentrate on mass shootings at schools, specifically Christian or Catholic schools, then the data set is wholly different. So don't conflate different data sets just to make a political point. There was an ideological content to this attack. That's what terrorism is. It's not because somebody didn't get the drug deal they wanted. It is an ideological message, whether it was anti-Israel, as in this case, whether it targeted President Trump in its rhetoric, as we saw on one of the magazines written by the perpetrator on that YouTube video, or whether we saw the fact that it was anti-Christian and targeting children. That has nothing to do with gang violence. Let's not mix the two things up.
So they're lumping all the statistics. Statistically, they're lumping anything. What is it, over three people?
Yeah, I think if at least three people are involved, it's a mass shooting, right?
So you had, for instance, the Sweet 16 birthday party north
Dadeville.
Of us. Dadeville. You know, that was a horrific event, but it wasn't what happened where the little children were in mass and were targeted.
Yeah,
that was something more of a beef gone bad, and now it's become rather too regular to settle that beef, like downtown Mobile for the moon pie dropping. That was
gang related.
Yeah,
I guess
gang related reaction. Related. These are targeted at schools, and he's saying that when you narrow it down to those in particular, there's a trend.
Yeah, also a trend are just
talking about trans people that are pulling the trigger.
Yeah, and of course you've got Covenant in Nashville, and then this most recent one in Minnesota, and a few more where the shooters have at least claimed to be transgender or non-binary.
They were school shooting, right?
After, well, not all of them. Like that one out in Colorado was a LGBTQ club.
Oh, remember? Yeah.
And a guy came out and said he was trans after doing that, although that's been disputed since. But violence against churches, that's a trend in general as well, regardless of who's pulling the trigger. And I saw this New York Post put out this over the weekend. A new report from the Family Research Council identified 1,384 incidents of hostility against U.S. churches from 2018 through last year, 2024. 50 incidents in 2018, climbed to 83 in 2019, 55 in 2020, then 98 in 2021. But listen to what happened after 2021. In 2022, 198 recorded instances of hostility against churches, whether it's shootings or other sorts of vandalism. Then it continued to go up, 485 cases in 2023, then 415 in 2024. So you go from 50 incidents in 2018 all the way up in a pretty straight line up after 2022 to 415 last year. And it's still happening this year, as we well know. What is that? You know, what is leading to that? So many acts of violence against churches. You mentioned it, and it was such a sad statement last week after that mass shooting at the school, at the mass there. And they said they will now lock their doors, right, once mass begins. And that's just the opposite of what you think of when you think of church.
It's amazingly sad and obviously necessary. I guess it's necessary. And we're talking about right here in Mobile, some of the changes they were making to lock the doors.
Yeah, you're right. That was here.
Once mass begins at places like St. Dominic's and St. Pius. Can you imagine?
Terrible.
852, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. And Jeff Porcho's on the way.
Hey, thanks, Kane. 856 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. The Jeff Porcho Show on the way next. This segment brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. You don't need me to tell you, football's back. And Underdog is the best place to select entries and win money all season long. You can play in Alabama. It's been that case for some time now. I've been playing Underdog well over a year and having a blast while I play. Like this last Saturday, so many great games to check out while playing on Underdog. It's easy. Just choose whether your favorite players will go higher or lower on stats like touchdowns, receiving yards, interceptions, and more. If you get those entries right, you could win up to 5,000 times your cash, and you could play with as little as $1. So we had some college ball this weekend. I had plenty of entries going and plenty more this week and weekend with NFL getting started. Have that Dallas and Philly game on Thursday night, and then the Chiefs and Chargers Friday night. Download the Underdog app today. Sign up with promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. You'll score $50 in bonus funds when you play your first $5. It's promo code Dalton. Millions of fans have already won billions making plays on Underdog. Will you be next? Underdog, make plays, win money. You must be 19-plus and present in Alabama. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/play and get terms. _DFS_.html for details. If you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
On the Jeff Poor Show, on the way in moments, you've got columnist Paul DeMarco. He'll be sliding in about 9:35 this morning. Also, State Representative Jennifer Fidler from Baldwin County. She'll be in there about to, in the, a little after 10:30. And ALGOP Chair John Wall, also head of the libraries in some form or fashion here in the state of Alabama. He'll be on at 11:35.
President of the board, he is.
Yep.
Michael's taking his guess. He said, I think the Trump presser will be about the Department of Defense being renamed into the Department of War. That's a solid guess, Michael, and that is on the way, making that change, allegedly. Ozzie said financial reset, so I think that's Ozzie's guess for what Trump's talk will be about today. Is he going to hammer Jerome Powell or what? I guess we'll have to see and talk about it in the morning. Jeff Porcho on the way next. Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan at noon. And we're back at FM Talk, ready for action after that Labor Day weekend.
Yeah. See you in the morning. If we don't see you, we'll talk to you for sure and text back and forth with you beginning at 6 a.m.